Possibilities with Alan Steinfeld. This program is about exploring new possibilities in an evolving world. Tonight I have some very special guests who are bridging the place between the dimensions, or making that available to people, showing them what is possible and how we are actually evolving as a planetary civilization. They are Hope and Randy Mead, and they've just produced this film called Orbs, Lifting the Veil is Lifting, and we'll be talking about the film and talking about the whole way this dimension is actually increasing its vibratory rate, so other things seem to be appearing in our world. Hope, Randy, are you there?
Yes, here.
Okay, is that a fair introduction?
Yes, that sounds right on.
The other thing I have to say is that we will all be at a conference in New York on November 10th. They are going to be showing the movie Orbs, The Veil is Lifting, and this is November 10th at 49 White Street, which is three blocks south of Canal. That's in New York, November 10th, starting at 4 p.m. from 4 to 10 p.m. If you have any questions, just email me, Alan Steinfeld, at newrealities@earthlink.net, and I'll get you more information about this very exciting conference. You're also going to be at the conference in Palm Springs, right?
That's right, this weekend.
This weekend, where you'll be premiering the film.
Correct.
So, I mean, for people who don't know what orbs are, I'll say that they seem to be the little balls of light that are appearing everywhere in everybody's digital cameras. Now, what they are, I'm not sure. What's your take on orbs? Either one of you.
Yes, well, the bottom line is that they're consciousness, that there's consciousness involved with them, and that they communicate and show consciousness through the way that they relate.
Mm.
And we believe that they can be inhabited by all kinds of different things. They could be angels or ghosts, or us when we travel in our astral bodies, when we leave our bodies through death, the dying process. And that they're just, that's what we are, basically. We are orbs of light at our core.
Mm. But what evidence do you have? I mean, I have my own. They seem to appear for me, and that's, I sort of sense them, and then I will take a digital picture, and they seem to be there when I sense them. Sometimes they're there when I'm not sensing them, and sometimes they're also there if I sense they're there and they're not. But mostly they seem to impact my consciousness with a certain awareness. So for me, that's how I feel these are conscious, whatever they are. What makes you think they're conscious?
Well, they really, after years of sort of photographing them and playing with the energy, there is that subjective, you know, repeated subjective impression that they're responding to your consciousness, they're responding to your consciousness. We have some very dramatic photos where, things felt like it was, there's really something going on, and then we see there's a big funnel of light coming out of the top of my head or something. You know, some very dramatic instances where it really appears to be relating to our consciousness. And it's come to people's attention on digital media, but there's many older photographs on film, and then the farther we get into it, we're meeting more and more people who see them with their naked eyes, and we have started to see them with our eyes under certain circumstances. So then you sort of have to eliminate photo anomalies as a possibility when you start seeing it with your eyes.
Right, and there's no way to prove, like, because two people may be looking at the same thing. It just depends where your consciousness is as who will see it. Wouldn't you say?
Very true. Yes, that's very true. Also, Ellen, you just said that sometimes you feel them, but you don't necessarily get them on your camera. We're convinced that they're there whether you see them or not, that the film, you know, the digital cameras allow us to have that feedback that, you know, that they're there. But a lot of times they're there and they're not necessarily picked up on the camera.
Right.
Sometimes as we're seeing them more and more, the flash will go off and we'll see them with our naked eyes illuminated, but then we don't see them on the camera.
Right. You know what's weird? Sometimes I get the same being, entity. I mean, there's a sort of signature that I have one that seems to be appearing a lot around me. And is that true?
Okay. Yeah, with being similar features. A number of people have commented on that. Sometimes, especially people who are involved in some kind of spiritual pursuit, there will often be signature orbs that, that it seems like the same orb appearing near them, you know, frequently.
Right. I mean, I don't think this is just some weird digital effect. I do think the veil is lifting, the doorway or the, you know, wall between the our dimensions are getting thinner. Let's talk about that. I mean, this is one piece of evidence. What other evidences do we have that that is actually true?
Well, we believe that the crop circles are evidence of that also.
Right.
And that,
and of course, increased UFO sightings is another instance of.
So, there's so many people that are still living in the old paradigm that we're alone in the universe or it doesn't matter. How do we bring the understanding that we are in a vast universe of consciousness to people who really don't have a clue? You know what I'm saying?
You know, what's interesting is that science is starting to point in this direction. One of the people we interview is a physicist who works for NASA, and he's very into orbs. And he, by the way, did extensive research with dust and water and pollen to try to make sure that he wasn't just looking at a refraction phenomenon. He's concluded these are emanations of spiritual beings, and that there is a shift in the cosmic weather. And William Tiller, who's done a huge amount of research on the power of intention and consciousness and some really dramatic, fascinating stuff, he's really concluded that his experiments in are working better now, that it was harder to get these results 20 years ago, and he has the data to prove it, that these experiments in applied intention are working better every year right now.
Well, I have to say, William Tiller also wrote the foreword to the Orb Project, which is a book that's sort of associated with your film, because they're both backed by Beyond Words.
Yes, we interviewed both the authors of the film, so we'll tie in.
Klaus Heinemann is the physicist that Randy was mentioning,
right.
And Michal Ledwith is the theologian from What the Bleep, who are the co-authors of the Orb Project.
Right, and they're both in your film. And just when you were talking there, the fact that, I mean, if this is really true and we are photographing interdimensional beings, this is really a miraculous time we're living in.
Absolutely. Really incredible.
I mean,
and, you know, they've been seen around sacred sites for a long time and crop circles.
Yeah, some of the earliest orb pictures we've seen are like in the pyramid, around the pyramids.
Or Machu Picchu.
Well, I got one, I think it was 1983, from a regular camera. It was a blue orb around Mount Rainier, a little ball of light.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it, actually, and then I took the picture and actually was in the picture. So there was a bleed through around these sacred sites, I think, to start with, because somehow the frequencies, there's sort of doorways there anyway.
Absolutely.
That's right, yeah.
And I think it's sort of like I see a picture of a kind of a peeling of an onion at these key spots that's sort of spreading around the planet now.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. We spoke in Sedona in May at the first Orb Conference ever, put on by the Prophets Conference people, and there were people from 14 countries there, and people were so excited, and that is what's happening. People all over the world, more and more, are getting them. In the last 5 years, since Randy and I have been researching this, it's amazing how commonplace, you know, orbs are becoming within people's lives.
Well, you know, the other weird thing, this is just my experience, is that you have to sort of be initiated. So I was up at the Ramtha School. I never heard of orbs before. And then Melissa up there, you know, who's on the staff, started to take these pictures. And then I felt like, oh, I can do that. So I started to take pictures of orbs because I was sort of introduced to it. And then people that I've met now who haven't been taking pictures of orbs, I say, okay, let me show you, and I kind of program an intention into the camera or into the way they're taking pictures, and then they start to get orbs. Is that true, or am I making this up?
No, I think that it's absolutely true. What happens is once you put it in someone's neural net, then they know, then they can validate this is a real phenomenon, and they're much more likely to get orbs in their own cameras.
What's weird is that sometimes people go back over old photographs and they realize, oh my gosh, I have these in my old photographs, but I never noticed them.
Exactly.
We heard a weird instance of some people in Spain. They were just Robin and Cody who put on the conference, and they went to a store in Spain, and there was an old picture of the town, and there was like four orbs in it. And they asked the storekeeper, what do you know about these balls? And she said, well, you know, I've been looking at that picture for 35 years. I've never seen them.
Well, you know, Jay, are you familiar with, Wampa, right?
Yes.
Jay-Z Knight is in the film.
And Jay-Z Knight's biography, A State of Mind, do you know that book?
Yes, right. Yes.
Well, if you look, I don't know if I have the book here, but if you look on, I'm actually in this photograph because I was, you know, involved with the Wampa people back then, and I think this picture was taken in 83 in the book, and then there's an orb on one of those photographic plates in A State of Mind. There's actually an orb in that book from the 80s.
Right.
So,
Wampa's been talking about them for a long time.
In 1981, Wampa said you will begin to see blurbs of orbs, spots of them, blue orbs, and he says it's the electromagnetic field of the Earth changing. He said he made that statement in November of 1981 in Boston, which he sort of predicted this, the whole coming of this whole light armada.
Uh-huh.
And that was a really powerful talk that really transformed a lot of things. So,
the orbs do seem to be like the tip of the iceberg, where you get orbs and you do it for a while, you start to get plasma shapes and more complex formations. Michal Ledwith has gotten these torsion vortexes, these incredible vortexes of orbs, and it starts to get more and more complex. And we've seen some work from the Netherlands and stuff where the orbs manifest and it forms columns of light and it appears.
Is that Robert's orbs? Is that the orbs around?
Yeah, Robert's orbs, and then you get these light beings that he's sitting and chatting with after a while.
He has actually an ET show up in one of his pictures, doesn't he?
Yes, although he doesn't like to call it an ET because he feels that they're, you know, very much part of our world, so to speak. But, and so it seems to really be the tip of the iceberg there.
Well, I'm just looking in this book, this autobiography of Jay-Z Knight, A State of Mind, and it's around page 200. There's these plates in there, and I'm marching through the desert with Jay-Z Knight, and actually Shirley MacLaine's in this picture, and Anne-Marie Benstrom, and right above us in the sky is this orb of light.
Wow, yeah.
From 1983, I think that was. So, I mean, they're starting. They exist, they're real, they're there, they're appearing everywhere, but what's happening to the Earth? What do you feel is really going on here? Where are we going?
Well, I think that what we've been told is happening, that the Earth is going through a major shift, and that it's a vibrational shift.
Right.
And the orbs are showing themselves now because, like you were saying earlier, the veil between dimensions is thinning. And so we're being able to see these things. And this is the good stuff. You know, there's so much sadness on the Earth right now, and there's so much negativity going on, that if people could go more into the orbs and into what's positive and good about the Earth, you know, then we'll see true change, I think.
Have people felt there's a message emanating from them? Because, I see them, I sense them, but I don't quite get what they're, if they're saying anything. Have you met people who feel they are?
Well, certainly some of the work that's being done at the ranch, at Jay-Z's ranch, with the people there, it's really quite amazing where they're doing communications with the orbs and getting answers, yes and no answers.
Oh, really?
Symbols appearing in the orbs. They hold up cards with different symbols in them and ask for the orbs to appear with the symbols in them.
Actually, that was true. We were told that when I was at the ranch to draw a symbol on a card that would appear in an orb, and I drew the infinity sign, and it actually appeared in that orb session we did.
Yeah.
So that's true.
And that's, of course, that's a communication, but it's sort of a tentative or initial communication. You know, it's not like a message for humanity or anything. But there's a really amazing series of pictures that we put in the film where there's a light sort of bobbing around my head and everything, and that was very much a classic spiritual message of, you know, love and acceptance and oneness, and it's like, you know, the classic spiritual message was definitely part of that experience for me. And I don't really know if that was coming from the orbs or the orbs was a byproduct of my interaction with a higher level of reality, or, you know, it's hard to put your finger on exactly what's going on there.
I think we're at the very beginning of this, too, and that part of what's going on right now is for us all to listen and observe, because we haven't been taught how to deal with these other dimensions. You know, it's not like you go to school and study that multidimensionality. You know, it's not taught. And so we all have to learn together and individually. And it's an evolving process that's going on right now. The, like we were saying, the light beings that are showing up in the Netherlands and in Robert's home are so advanced. Mm. And yet I feel that any of the orbs at any moment could turn into one of the light beings.
And also at the ranch, at Jay-Z's, at the Ramsey School, there was a plasma ship that appeared.
Yeah.
Amazing picture of these orbs or these sort of mists starting to form, looks like a spaceship. But there's also an association, I feel, between sound. Do you notice that?
They do seem, a lot of times when there's music being played or photographs at concerts, music or toning or chanting, it really seems to draw them in. We've had a number of cases where people are kind of sitting there and there's not much going on, not many orbs, and they say, well, sing a song, sing a Buddhist chant, or row, row, row your boat, or anything. Mm-hmm. And people sort of break into song and start having a good time. Suddenly the place is full of orbs, and so it really does seem to be some kind of association with sound and music and tone.
Well, the amazing thing in your film is that you're interviewing Joe Ocean and you're getting orbs around dolphins.
Yep.
Those were pictures Joan was kind enough to loan to us underwater.
Do you feel the dolphins themselves are actually aware of these orb beings?
Yeah, she very much feels that the dolphins are entirely aware of them, interact, appear to point them out or see them or interact with them, very much so.
Yeah, so they told us recently that she finds more orbs around the sharks than any of the other underwater animals.
Really? Well, how do you explain
yeah.
that? I mean, how would you like to
so much for peace and love, huh?
Well, maybe they're, you know, protecting people.
Well, and she says Hawaiian sharks are very friendly, that the Hawaiian people have been cultivating a relationship, and generally sharks in Hawaii are not aggressive, is what Joan says. Very interesting.
Uh-huh. So there is, I mean, I have a picture of an orb coming right out of the front of a didgeridoo that I took in Sedona last week, and
we met a player from Australia, and he told me a wonderful story. A didgeridoo store closed, and he bought this huge, giant display didgeridoo made out of fiberglass, and he put it on the roof of his place, and he attached a real didgeridoo to it, and he started playing it, and then he had a series of photographs. It's like the whole property filled up with orbs when he was playing this giant didgeridoo. So,
wow.
It's not the only didgeridoo orb story I've heard.
You know, I've never gotten a mist. I've gotten lots of orbs. I mean, it's practically orbs in every picture I take now, but I've never gotten the mist, I don't think. Is there a certain level of consciousness you need to be at to get the mist, sort of when they start to dissolve into things like that?
I really don't know it, that it's a hierarchy. I mean, sometimes we get mist, and other times just orbs. And, you know, there are people that get diamond-shaped orbs, which we ourselves have never gotten a diamond-shaped orb in tens of thousands of photos.
I think
but
I got a
six... almost half their orbs are diamond-shaped.
Really? I got a six-pointed star orb once that I couldn't believe. And then someone just sent me a sort of angelic wisping, like a sort of half-mist, half-orb picture. That I don't know what that means, but they called it an angel, an actual, real, angelic being that showed up for somebody.
Well, and if that's a company, that's what I always say to people. Well, if this visual manifestation is accompanied by, you know, a sudden influx of cosmic wisdom, or these improbable holographic insights that unfold, and perhaps you are dealing with an angelic being.
So, I mean, is there an association, you think, between UFOs and orbs, or are they, just part of separate dimensions? I mean, do you find there's some connection?
I think that the connection is back into that the veil is thinning, and that the UFOs don't necessarily have to show themselves in this dimension. It's their choice, and that to be able to travel here from where they come from, they are doing interdimensional travel. That's how they move around so fast. So in the same way that the orbs are showing more and more because there's a thinning happening between dimensions, I feel that there are more and more UFO sightings now for the same reason.
So if they
a connection, Hope. Do you want to tell your story, your connection?
Oh, well, my story was that I was standing out in the woods, and when I'm photographing for orbs, I'm sending love out to the universe. I know that that's what it's all about, sending out good vibes and sending out love. So I'm singing, love, love, come to me, come to me, and I'm photographing for orbs, and all of a sudden, through the trees, a big golden ship came right through the trees, flying right towards me. And I sort of went into shock, and Randy wasn't with me. I wasn't ready to have the experience by myself, so I must say I chickened out and ran and looked for Randy. But it was very clear that me being out there sending love out to the universe was what was attracting this golden ship to me.
Wow, I believe that. Yeah, I think I saw a UFO the other night. I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and directly out my front window, I mean, I'm in the middle of Manhattan, but due south was this light that was spinning. It wasn't an airplane because it was rotating from like silver to blue to red. It's kind of stationary. And then this light, sort of, it looked like a shooting star, but it came right down towards that light that was spinning and disappeared as it got close to it. And then I felt myself gasp for a second. It's like involuntary, like, what, just like, oh my God. So,
and did you just sort of wake up and look out your window for no reason?
Yes. I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning for no reason. I hate waking up early. and there they were, but, let's also talk. I'm just going to go over some notes that I took about some characteristics of orbs in case people, what I've noticed, and you can add, is that... Well, first, that they seem to be sort of transparent, most of them, but sometimes they're really solid and bright.
Yes, my belief is that, again, back into the dimensional, that when they're solid and bright, they are just more in 3D reality, so we can see them stronger. It doesn't mean that they're any stronger necessarily, even than the weak ones. It's just that they are allowing themselves to be manifest in our reality more so that the cameras can pick them up brighter.
Right, and they also sometimes pulsate. Like if you take a series of pictures, one orb may look smaller, and then the next picture it might actually be twice the size.
Right.
Yeah, they do seem to change size and position. A lot of times you'll say, wow, that really looks like the same orb. There's the same markings, the same things, but it's moved a huge distance, or at least seems larger, smaller, rotated.
Right, I notice the same things. And the other thing is that they're not always round. They sometimes have a strange oblong shape, or part of it is round and part of it is not round. Do you find that?
Yeah, sometimes they have like a raised lip, or it looks a little oblong, or almost like it's a pie plate that's turned a little sideways. And then there's some really weird manifestations where they start to break up or have big pieces missing out of them, look like Swiss cheese.
I've noticed
that. Or actually just start to break up entirely.
And then the other thing is that sometimes in the single picture, it seems like they're actually moving. There's like a red to blue trail on them. You notice that?
Yes,
and sometimes you can find one that apparently one orb has streaked across the whole frame even sometimes. And then if you think, wow, and that's the time elapsed of the flash is about a thousandth of a second. Here this thing has streaked across, 10 or 20 feet during that time.
Right. So do you think as the veils and the dimensional doorways really start thinning, they are going to be, like, we'll just see them? I mean, what's your hypothesis about what, where we're going and what...
I think more and more, I think they'll appear more and more in photographs, and more people will start to see them in certain circumstances, and it'll just become a more accepted part of our reality.
And then...
Yeah.
What does the world look like when these veils have really lifted? I mean, what do you see? I mean, of course, peace and love, but what practical things can we look forward to? Do you know what I'm asking? Like, what does the world look like for you as the veil, as if the veil is actually lifted on the planet? What would our world look like if we can just take a stab at that? What would it look like to you, guys?
Well, it's interesting because I think people, you know, we're moving more and more to people taking personal responsibility for their actions, but I really think as the veil lifts, people start to realize, wow, I need to take responsibility for, like, my thoughts and feelings and attitudes, too, because all of these things are coloring everything around me. So people, I think, really accepting responsibility for their own states of being and how that really affects their reality, I think, might be a big part of it.
I also think that this experience often takes one past religion, that religion, it sort of leaves religion, you know, in the dust, if you will, that it supersedes religion because it's all about what all the religions espouse to be talking about love and breaking down barriers. And I think that it's also important for everyone to greet this with love and not fear, that the people who are greeting it with fear won't let it be part of their reality. They, you know, that we haven't been conditioned, we haven't been taught what this is about, and so at any age, you know, we can jump into this with an open heart and an open mind and accept it and explore it. And that's kind of why we made the movie, really, was to show this with people and to share it with people in a loving way, and that it's exciting that this is happening and that we should greet it with love.
Well, I liked what you guys said, and it's really is about taking responsibility for our thoughts and our own consciousness, and somehow that grounds our spiritual experience. You know, for so long, the spiritual scene has been so out there and ungrounded and, in a sense, irresponsible. And now I think by taking responsibility for the thoughts we have and what we draw into our lives and seeing the practical application of that, it makes it more real.
Absolutely.
You know, I think the whole new age is just maturing in that way.
That's right, and people have been spiritual seekers for a while, and you can have the amazing peak experiences, and you start to realize over time, wow, it is about groundingness, and how does this apply, you know, in a more mundane way, not just a peak experience, but how does this affect our day-to-day lives?
So, do you think 2012 somehow, I mean, I've talked about this before, but what's your take on 2012? Is that like mark a certain time in the evolution, or is it an arbitrary date? Does it mean anything to you guys?
To us it does. There's so many prophecies from so many different cultures around the world that point to 2012 as a date. We've been looking at it for almost 30 years now as a specific date. And as we get closer to that date, it seems that things are really shifting.
Right.
I mean, my God, when you see what's happening right now in Southern California with the fires, you know, and what's happening in the Arctic with the Arctic melting, and there's so many things on a physical level that are manifesting on the planet. And I personally think it's because of the sun and not necessarily because humans have done anything wrong, though we are definitely creating havoc on the planet. I think there's a bigger picture here going on.
Well, that's true. I agree. It's not necessarily human creation, but it's a solar event.
Yes, that's what.
Yeah, and we seem to be going in a high-energy photon belt. A lot of people seem to, you know, there seems to be a lot of indication that the whole solar system is moving into a high-energy zone now that's going to culminate at 2012. You know, if it gets to be 2012 and nothing spectacular happens, it's not like I'm going to be disappointed. I'm not holding my breath. I think plenty of amazing things are going to happen before 2012.
Right, and they're happening now. Who would have thought?
Happening right now, exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, I do think, where did you hear about this 30 years ago? 2012.
Well, it was, I guess, was it more like 25 years ago? It was around the whole harmonic convergence. And
yes, Jose Arguelles. That's when I heard about it.
Jose Arguelles, yeah. Exactly.
Right. I mean, the harmonic, August 7th, 16th, and 17th, 1987, was a great celebration around the planet, that all around the planet, all the sacred sites. Do you remember that? Where were you?
Yeah. We were in the San Francisco Bay Area, Marin County.
And did you do a special celebration on...
Yeah, we had a ceremony at a rock that had some ancient pictographs on it.
Mm-hmm. And I started to do a general survey about people being everywhere on the planet for the harmonic convergence, and that was a sort of beginning of the shift in this lifting of the veil, I think. It seems to really be a momentous time.
Yes.
Yeah, it seemed like a real turning point, at least in a lot of people's consciousness, you know, which...
Well, it also... We also went mainstream as a kind of subculture. It sort of was then really acknowledged. I mean, it may not have been embraced, but at least it was noticed.
Right,
yes.
That's right.
And I mean, I was up in Woodstock in a place called the Magic Meadow, and there were hundreds of people there holding hands and singing and celebrating and getting up at sunrise. But there were people everywhere. There were people in Haleakala and Maui and Machu Picchu and the Grand Canyon and Sedona. And everywhere that I was aware of, there were people gathering for this welcoming of what Jose Arguelles says was the end of the ninth hell, you know?
Right.
And the beginning of this 25-year cycle that will end on the winter solstice 2012. That's the end of the Mayan calendar, winter solstice 2012. And from what I know, it's when the sun lines up with the galactic center in a direct alignment with that consciousness which is emanating from the center. And people like Terence McKenna says that great thing is casting its shadow back in time and affecting us now. So that may be a key to how the veils are lifting, because we are coming into alignment with something more than just the solar energy.
That's right. And there is theoretically, from a number of sources you hear, this belt of high energy photons that's passing from the galactic center, and we're just moving more and more into it as we approach 2012. So we're already in it. We're just not in the center of it. So that, I think you're right. That could very well be the mechanism that is initiating this change.
Right. And if we believe in sort of astrology at all, we realize that then we are being affected by that which we are in the stellar aspect. So if there's a photon belt that's emanating out, it's affecting consciousness.
That's right.
And so we're seeing a great spiritual awakening on the planet, although it may not look like that, does it?
So I totally agree with you. I feel that that's the work for all of us to take on between now and 2012, is for us to, you know, open our consciousness, raise our consciousness, become centered in our bodies, and to be ready for whatever changes happen. When you say, what does it look like when, you know, in 2012, I really am, I visualize tomorrow. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm not, you know, I have a strong sense of today and of the orbs and what they mean to me and of my experience with them. But in terms of knowing, you know, none of us really know. I mean, none of us really know what it's going to look like, because we've all been programmed to know reality in a certain way.
Mm.
So we're just kind of, you know, trying to open up to see what the greater reality is, and to embrace that on a day-by-day time frame.
Right. It's like the parable of Plato's cave, where the people were living in the cave and just seeing the shadows on the wall and thinking that's reality, until someone goes out of the cave and realizes what the source of those shadows were. And so we are now, I think, coming into a time where we're stepping out of this shadow world, this flat land, and coming into a consciousness that understands the source of consciousness. Does that make sense?
That's very well put, actually. Very well put, yes.
So you said, Hope, about opening up our consciousness. How do you recommend people do that?
Well, for Randy is a musician, and so we have done a lot of work with music and orbs, and orbs is attraction to music and higher vibration through music. So certainly, that, you know, playing music or having music singing joyous occasions, we're very excited about getting people together in groups and having an orb experience.
Yeah. What does that mean, an orb experience?
Well, what that means is we get together, we invite people, and they and come. They can it can be anywhere, though. Places where there has already been higher energies, as we say, churches or synagogues where people are praying, or mosques, or parties.
Or cross centers, yoga centers.
Actually, we're going to do this event in New York at a synagogue. It was originally a yoga studio, but I was able to get a bigger place, and it's just called the Synagogue of the Arts.
I'm very excited. I'm sure that there are going to be orbs all over, and Randy and I look forward to having an orb experience there, and we do invite anyone who comes that night to bring your digital camera, and Randy will bring his flute, and we're going to do whatever we can do to invite the orbs in to join us. So we're hoping that everyone can have an orb experience that night.
So an orb experience meaning that you play your music and you do things, and then everyone will just start to take pictures.
Take pictures, and we'll just see what turns up, and people can have a direct experience of it. And like you said, it often does work by initiation. We made a short film 5 years ago, quite a short film, when we first discovered orbs, just about our personal journey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we keep hearing people, oh, well, we watched that videotape, and then we took our cameras, and we went out, and lo and behold, we got orbs. Just the very awareness of it, thought of it, thinking about it, tends to sort of open that experience. So
well, do you live with
an initiation.
It is, but are you, like, I have to say, living with the orbs? Are they in, I mean, because I go out and take pictures, but I don't feel like maybe I am, but they're not with me, like, all the time. I mean, in my awareness, they might be, and I'm sure they are, but I don't feel like, do you feel like they're in your every moment awareness?
Not in my awareness, but I've come to believe and feel that they're with us at all times.
I do think it's a matter of our focus, though, or our own vibration, rather than whether they're there or not.
Uh huh. So they probably are here all the time, and they're probably everywhere.
Well, Alan, you live your life. I mean, look at the people that you interview and where you put your attention. And your work is all about the higher dimensions. So I'm not surprised that I'm sure that they're around you all the time, and that you saw the ship the other night looking out your window.
I know that
you're,
was weird.
You're open to this, and so you have those experiences.
Yeah. Could we be living with a ball of light? I mean, like, hi, there's, you know, Fred, the ball of light. I mean, you know, I mean, is that...
I think so, and I've met a couple of people that are kind of like that, and they're not real vocal about it, because people tend to look a little askance, you know, if you get too
vocal about them. So maybe this is all these, what people, when they saw angels, projected on a kind of a religious, Christian sort of religious thing onto what's now becoming an everyday occurrence.
That's what we believe.
Yeah, isn't that remarkable, though?
It is remarkable. I know, and ghosts, too. You know, ghosts are often, there are a whole group of people out there that are ghost hunters, and they've decided that all orbs are disincarnate spirits. And, you know, I think that that's probably one of the things that they are.
I mean, how would we tell the difference between a disincarnate or an angel? Is there different patterns, you think, that signify different, types of consciousnesses?
Well, I've seen people go to some rather great lengths along these lines, but I truly don't think we have enough information to do that. Although, you know, ghosts are supposed to be trapped on this plane, and I have very little experience with orbs where they seem trapped anywhere. They seem up and down, in and out, back and forth, not
right.
Really trapped.
Yeah,
like commuters.
We can all agree that there's something out there. It's not a camera defect. It seems to be a phenomenon. But I think we really can conclude at this moment what they actually are. Is what I mean. It might have something to do with consciousness. I mean, I'm sure it does. It seems there's, you know, clues to it. But I don't think anyone really knows.
No, and I think this may be the origin. A lot of people, when you get spiritual insight and you see these things, this could be the origin of a lot of the what you say about angels and you know, elves and fairies are often portrayed not just as little beings, but as balls of light that people see in the woods, will-o'-the-wisps in myths and legends where people, you know, don't follow the ball of light out into the swamp because it'll lead you into a quicksand. There's been legends, could really be based on people perceiving some of this with their eyes and putting their own interpretation on it.
That's probably true, because there was a quote I saw of Goethe, the German writer Goethe, where he saw these balls of light along the side of a road, and he got out of his carriage and just stared at them. I think I'll read that at the conference that we're doing, but it was like, oh yeah, balls of light have been noticed throughout history, and but now everyone is getting it. It is a great time. But do you think then that at some point it'll just shift where everyone will start to live in this vibration? I mean, what's going to happen to people that you think that refuse to go there? Is there going to be a new heaven and new earth for them as well as us?
Well, you know, the Hopis talk about the two paths on their rock where they have the petroglyph about what's going on, and it's been proved where they showed World War II and all of these different dates really line up, and we're just at the time now where they show the two paths that people will take, and I think that this is part of what we're seeing with the orbs. Some people will open, and we've seen that. Some people will see a photograph with an orb, and you can just feel it. Their heart opens up, and they know that this is real. And other people, even they get them in their own camera, and they can't believe it. They won't let it be. They give all the reasons why this can't, be a phenomenon. It has to be some sort of artifact in the camera.
Yeah, but sometimes 2 months later, they're completely into it too. They've seen it three more times, and it's like, okay, I know it's not a camera artifact now.
Well, maybe that's part of the conversion to the consciousness, the higher consciousness. It's just this phenomenon showing up, and it's just another way, like the crop circles, like UFO sightings, that are telling people there's more to reality than what we've been programmed to think, you know?
Absolutely. The visible light spectrum is such a small bit of what is available out there. I mean, the invisible light spectrum is huge, and why we think that what we can see is is all there is. And in a way, since we live in a seeing is believing world, it's very interesting that now we can actually see these other dimensions.
But, even science is saying that we only can really see 5% of the whole universe, and the 95% is dark matter and dark energy. And we don't have any idea what that is. I think it's as if we've been seeing just the surface of a pond or a lake, and we haven't been able to see what's below the surface. That's visible light, just the surface.
Yeah, and that sounds right.
Right. Sometimes the angle of the sun changes slightly, and suddenly, boom, you're seeing down under the water.
But getting back to the Hopis and what the two paths are, so the one path would be towards light and higher consciousness and peace, and I guess the other path is the opposite. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. Some people, I don't think that we can assume in any way that the whole planet will wake up. I think that there needs to be, there's a critical mass, and that's what it will take.
Do you think it's 144,000 has been predicted, or not necessarily, or...
I don't know, that number comes up again and again, but hard to say what the critical mass, the TM, for years and years and years, they had the paradigm that if 1% of the population would meditate, it would change everything.
Yeah.
And I think now it's more like, well, maybe we need 5% of the population to meditate to change everything.
That always sounds so dogmatic to me. It's sort of like it was like the Middle Ages. If the whole world was Christian, then we'd have the Second Coming. It's like I think we need to allow the diversity.
Well, everybody can find their own path. I don't think it has to be so rigid. No.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the diversity of consciousness that is what's going to wake people up and start to bring us in a new realm. So,
but there's probably a critical mass of a creative minority, whatever, the 100th monkey or the 144,000th monkey, I'm not sure what it is, but there probably is a critical mass where it will, you know, turn the whole.
You know, I saw a great bumper sticker once. It said, "Relax, I'm the 100th monkey." I can make a T-shirt that says that, but it's true, because I think what you're saying is right about critical mass, because when critical mass is reached in the consciousness of even the few, it's like that affects our morphogenetic field, and people who weren't even into a spiritual awakening suddenly find themselves having an awakening. I think that's why, I mean, that's why it's great what you're doing. I think the film is a great step in revealing the process of our evolving consciousness. So, do you have any other plans? You've made this film, you're going to be touring with it, but what else are you guys up to?
Well, right now, we really pushed to get this film done and out. It was the time, and Cynthia Black at Beyond Words, bless her heart, really wanted this film to happen and get it out soon. So our whole life is this right now. One of the things that's very interesting is that we made this film to reach the masses. We didn't want to be too out there so as to exclude people. So one of the things that we've looked at is doing a second film, possibly, that would include some of the things that we didn't include in this film, such as Joan Ocean, who is in the film, is a wonderful woman, swims with the dolphins, like we were saying, has also started meeting with Sasquatch.
And oh, really? Physical meetings with Sasquatch?
Actual physical meetings.
Physical meetings.
Yeah.
Oh, my
There's
God. That is amazing. But not in Hawaii. She must meet
No, in the States, in a place in the middle of the country. And there's a family of 33, a tribe, actually, of 33 Sasquatch that she's been meeting with and communicating with. They live underground.
Has she photographed them?
Well,
they don't appear to really want to be photographed, but she has now started leading select groups out where they camp out and meet with them and such. So
that is amazing.
It's pretty spectacular. There's some neat stuff on it on
are
the
they,
website about it.
Are they interdimensional or not? That some people
absolutely,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So they can appear and disappear.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they appear to be able to just wink out at will. They're interdimensional.
You know, I think they're the Neanderthals that science says disappeared and was taken over. I think they had actually bigger brains than the Cro-Magnon that we...
Well, and they actually told Joan that at the last ice age, 12,000 years ago or something, that they were at our level of civilization.
And now where are they?
Way beyond. They the spiritual technology, so they don't have artifacts, and then we don't find them. But
they live off the land. They're very primitive in their lifestyle. They don't have a kind of artifact culture that we do, right?
Although she said they have underground with lights that mysteriously come on, and there's a whole spiritual technology. Although they appear to live very simply, so.
That's amazing. I want to go with her and to meet some Sasquatch.
I know.
That is, because I know they exist. I know they're, I mean, there's legends all over the world of them.
That's right.
Are you going? Isn't that exciting?
Well, we are. We haven't set it up, but
we definitely want to do that with her.
You know, and along those lines, there's a guy, I think on this radio station, Brooks Agnew, that's taking a ship into the inner earth through the Arctic. Did you hear about that?
That's right. Yeah.
I have heard about that.
And the civilization that lives there, maybe that's connected to Sasquatch, or maybe they're just living on another plane. Wow. I want to do a movie about the Sasquatch.
I know.
Well, we could do it together, yeah.
That would be really exciting. Oh my.
Well, that's what, when you ask about what we're doing, the idea of doing in the next movie, see, that would include that, and some of the work that Jay-Z's doing that we didn't get to include in the,
like
in
what?
The film. And with Michal, we have photographs of that he let us use, Michal led with, of his Taurusian vortexes, but we don't really talk about what they are or that they run counter to gravity, and that if you walk into one of these, you can time travel. So
you know, I was just... What's that, Randy?
Oh, Oh, just that there's just amazing things going on right now.
Well, I was just at Dominor, Italy. Have you heard of that place?
Yes,
yeah.
We have, yes.
They have time machines as well. Where they,
that's
they,
what I understand.
They've gone back to Atlantis. And actually, I got a lot of orb around this sacred site in Italy, in Dominor, and they were really... it was a kind of feminine ritual spot, and there were an amazing orbs there.
Not surprising.
Well, again, it's a group of people who are working with consciously with the dimensions, working with raising their vibration.
Mm.
So that would make sense.
And they actually have something they called, which I didn't really quite understand, were time satellites, where they'd send an object backwards in time, and then it would appear in the future, and then it would come back to them with information. So they were calling these things time satellites.
Uh-huh.
Interesting stuff. I mean, it's truly, we are moving into a new heaven and a new earth.
See, and I think, Dominor, that's partly what you say, what will the future look like when people embrace these other dimensions?
Mm.
That's kind of what it's going to look like. They're doing these things that sound outlandish to us, but it's something that they do now on a regular basis. It's part of their world.
It's true. They just kind of gave us hints of that. I mean, when I was in there, to really get into it, you really have to become part of that community, but it was fascinating enough to want to go back and go to these underground temples that they've built, in these underground temples, they've wrapped the whole temple in miles of copper wire that seem to amplify the energy as well.
My goodness, yeah,
So it's worth going over there. I'll set you up there. I have a good contact there.
Oh, excellent. We definitely want to visit there. That's something else we'd love to do.
And what's the thing Jay-Z's doing now, if you can say? Because I've been part of that.
Well, he's doing some great stuff. Well, there's the work with the symbols that you participated in.
Yeah.
Then they've done some great stuff with remote viewing, where they set up a remote viewing scene, actually, in the future, and they have the class... sit and try to get a take on what's in a closed box in a room in the future.
Right.
And then what they found actually was that the number of people in the class who actually got direct hits on what it was, like a picture of dolphins, I think, in this box, when they photographed the room with the box in it, they got orbs, pretty much the same number of orbs as the number of students who did a correct remote viewing.
Wow.
So they're convinced that those orbs are the consciousness of the students who got themselves into the room, saw the contents of the box, and reported back accurately.
Wow, that is a great study. That is brilliant. So we then send our consciousness as light into parallel dimension or parallel timelines.
Exactly, and able to, you know, gather information and bring it back, much what you're saying in Dominor, that's a sort of innate skill of ours.
Wow. So I think that's what the future, when I asked you guys, what does the future look like? It's that once we go beyond survival and the first three chakras of, that are involved in that, and we start to move to the heart chakra and the higher levels of consciousness, and we start to tap into more subtle feelings and subtle facilities that we have as human beings,
yes.
And we start to activate our greater mind, our greater creative mind, and our ability to feel more things.
Yes. Well, being humans, that's one of the things that's so wonderful that we cherish is being able to feel. And it's very important now, I think, for people to use their sense of feeling and to understand these senses that we have not been trained to understand or to work with.
Right, because we've been so wrapped up in our dramas and survivals, we haven't even given ourselves enough space to realize we have these other capabilities.
That's right.
And so your work and everything at the Ramtha School and this whole field is starting to gel and starting to go mainstream, and it's very exciting.
It is very exciting. James Gilliland is also in our movie, and of course he's a UFO contactee who lives at Mount Adams, at the base of Mount Adams in Trout Lake. And again, that's where we first discovered orbs, and at first when we discovered them, we thought they were only there because of all the UFO activity and because that it was more open, as we say, to these, you know, beyond the third dimension. But
right.
then we began to see that that was, you know, just one of the places that they were. But it does substantiate, again, the idea that certain places are more open to other dimensions coming through right now.
You know, and were they in our backyard all along, probably? Did they follow us home from Mount Adams? I don't know.
Also, the thing about James Land, I haven't been there, but it's like what I know
you
is that these lights appear all the time
left
there.
On this call.
Hello?
Oh, you cut out for a second.
Oh, there was someone came in. But just talk about James, what happens on James's land.
Well, James has been there for quite some time. He has a retreat center, and he has UFOs come over all the time.
Well, what do they look like? Because I just seen lights over his land, right?
Basically, they're lights, but what happens is
sometimes they come down low enough where you see lights, rings of lights within rings, or, you know, where it looks more like what you expect a ship to look like with, you know, spinning lights and, you know, more physical looking. Although a lot of times they do just come in as balls of light, but what's amazing is they'll react to the people on the ground. James will take a laser or a high-powered flashlight and flash three times, and suddenly this thing will stop dead in the air and flash back three times. Or, you know, there's some real remarkable things. Or sometimes the Air Force comes by quite frequently and chases them. And so, you know, many times you can see a ship, and a jet comes, and the ship blinks out, and the jet goes past, the ship blinks back in. There's a whole very entertaining sort of hide and seek that goes on there between the Air Force and the ships.
Wow!
And sometimes they will come right down, and I mean, people there have actually, you know, ducked because they thought they were going to take their hats off. I mean, usually it's lights up in the sky, but once in a while they get something really low and really spectacular.
Are they getting psychic communications as well from these ships?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, he does. James seems to usually know when they're coming in. He'll say, about 9:35 tonight, and then he'll drift out, and there'll be a bunch of activity. And, you know, he had a near-death experience, and he was a spiritual seeker. He wasn't really looking for UFOs at all.
Huh.
And one day in his meditation, he felt an incredible connection.
I'm sorry. You have exceeded your time limit on this call.
Hello?
Sorry, we cannot process your call at the moment. Please try again later.
Hello? Randy? Hope? Hello? Hello? Seth? Oops. Hi, hello, Hope and Randy Mead.
Okay, we're back.
Yes, hi.
Okay, we just went off the air because we got disconnected for a second. But we can wrap it up and recap. But it's just you guys are just incredible explorers of consciousness.
We're right there with you, Alan.
I know, but isn't the world really exciting now that all these things that come, all these secrets, I mean, Sasquatch and UFOs and interdimensional beings, it's just a phenomenal time.
It is a phenomenal time to be alive and to be open to it all.
I know, and we were so busy this summer, we just looked and saw what this summer's crop circles were like. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's another thing. Yes, do you see the one that has that doorway in it? That's
yes,
mentioned?
I did. Yes.
And then the butterfly?
Yes, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, boy, if this is being done by drunken farmers with boards on their feet, It says something about the human abilities that more than I can imagine.
That's a really good point. That's really good. But
I mean,
you know,
look at some of these thoughts. Anyway.
Well, they show you when it grows back the next year, there's still some radiation that affects the growth of even a second generation of crop.
Oh, that's right. The genetics of the cereal has improved as well.
But also the crop itself still has some echo effect of the previous year's crop circle. Even
really? You can see a shadow of the form.
Yeah, there's some shadow of the form. And some of them, yeah. So it proves that, you know, it's not a bunch of guys. I mean, the thing about all this is it's really easy to believe that it's nothing. I mean, it's more comfortable to say, oh, yeah, people are stomping down the crop circles with boards, or that these are artifacts of a camera. You know, it's much easier to be a sheep and to have someone tell you what to think as opposed to start to branch out and say, you know, I think there's something more than what I've been told, and I'm willing to take a trip into the unknown and see what comes of that.
That's right. Well, we really encourage people to take their digital cameras and have an orb experience for themselves.
This is what's fun. Almost everybody has a digital camera. Don't have to go to England. Don't need to do anything special. All you need is your camera and your mind, your intention, and you can play with this and see, you know, do your own research and consciousness.
But I do find in the more expensive cameras there seems to be sort of a filter that blocks something out. Don't you see that?
Yeah, there is. There's an issue of a hot, there's a, what's called a hot filter. There's an infrared filter that they put in cameras, and it does tend to be better on the more expensive cameras. Uh-huh. That's probably the main reason why cheaper and mid-range digital cameras seem to do better, although there are certain higher-end cameras that seem to work well.
Oh, really? What make of camera? Not that we have to endorse any make, but what do you find? Because I find my Nikon really works well, but it's a cheap mid-range camera.
Yeah, boy, almost any mid-range camera works well. We've had good results with just about all of the major brands.
Yeah, the Casio and Olympus and mid-range, and they do great jobs.
Now, Michal has a technique. He, and I haven't really tested this, but he insists it works quite well, that it is partly the sensitivity to infrared that allows it to happen.
Mm.
So he suggests that you take your television remote to the camera store, make sure there's batteries in the camera, and then without even photographing, if you can simply flash the remote into the lens of the camera and see a bright flare on the LCD, that means that it does not have a very effective infrared filter, and it will, in fact, pick up orbs. So
I think that's in the book, the Orb Project, that technique.
I think that is in the book, yeah, and it seems like really good advice. If you're going to go buy a camera, you know, just annoy them a little at the camera store.
Well, it's easy in New York. B&H Photo has about 20 different digital cameras display, and you can just go right down the line and just test them all. But it's been really great talking to you both. And let's just say the film is called Orbs, The Veil is Lifting. Hope and Randy Mead created this. And is it produced by Beyond Words Publishing?
It's produced by us, actually.
We produced this.
But they're distributing it?
They're distributors and partners. It was a joint venture.
And do you have a website if people want to order the film?
They should go to beyondword.com.
BeyondWord.com.
Although it's Beyond Words Publishing, the website is www.beyondword.com, and they can order the films in. We just got our first box today, and so they can order it.
Well, you must be very excited about that.
Yes, and they can also see the trailer on the website.
Oh, BeyondWord.com is a trailer?
Yeah, and then there's a trailer for the trailer for the film.
And there's also a telephone number for Beyond Word or Beyond Words Publishing is 503-531-8700. And that's sort of in conjunction with the book out by Beyond Words Publishing called The Orb Project, written by Michal Ledwith and Klaus Heinemann, who both are in your film.
Yes. And Michal will, of course, be joining us in New York as well.
That's right. Michal will be in New York along with Hope and Randy Mead on November 10th. at the Synagogue of the Arts, starting at 4 p.m. at 49 White Street. I'm just going to give my telephone number if they, people want to order, pre-order tickets. It's 212-473-6388. Or email newrealities@earthlink.net. And you're also going to be in Palm Springs this weekend, right?
Correct.
Correct, yeah.
It's going to be the premiere of the film, huh?
Yes,
that
the premiere
of the film. That is the official premiere of the film.
At the Prophets Conference. And I guess there's a website for the Prophets Conference. Do you know?
They can go to the Prophets Conference.
Well, great. I mean, this is. I think we put out a lot of good information, and I can't see how anyone could be skeptical after hearing this.
Well, people are skeptical if they want to be skeptical. Is the beauty of it.
But there's probably going to be a couple of hundred people coming to Palm Springs for the conference, right?
I would think. Yeah.
Yes, we look forward to it. There's going to be a lot of great speakers. Nancy Burson will be there, and Shelley Yates, who did.
Oh, Shelley Yates. That's a story.
Actually, the conference is called Orbs and Light Beings, so we're trying to be very inclusive.
Oh, actually, maybe I'll call the New York thing Orbs and Light Beings, but because I think Nancy Burson is going to also be speaking in New York, and she's connected with the what she calls extra celestials.
That's right. Yeah.
Different take on Orbs, but Shelley Yates. See if we can get her to come to New York. She's amazing.
Yes.
I know that's an amazing story, isn't it?
Yeah, just mention if she'd like to. She would really add to the program and, just put it out there. I mean,
okay, we will.
But thank you. And now, is there any way to get in touch with you guys?
Yes, you can go to our website, which is toolsfortranscendence.com.
toolsfortranscendence.com. And do you have anything besides the film on there?
Well, there are a lot of photographs that people could instantly be looking at to wet their whistle.
Oh, good.
For what's about to come.
Oh, good. Oh, good. So I just think we are moving into new times. The dimensions are thinning. We are lifting our vibration. Time is slowing down and speeding up at the same time. And I think the technologies that are coming along and the shift in consciousness, we will not recognize the world that we're in now and probably by 2012.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Whatever I think it's going to look like, I'm probably missing by half at least.
Well, it really is the unknown. When Ramtha says we're here to make known the unknown, we are moving into new territory.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. And that's part of this excitement. If we knew what it was, it wouldn't be such an adventure. So.
That's right. So, but at least it seems like we're on the right track, doesn't it?
It feels like it. It feels like it to me. And it's important that we all keep our optimism and move forward with joy.
And this is positive. This is the good stuff. Like Hope said, you know, there's a lot to worry about or whatever, but there's a lot to be really thankful for and joyful about right now too.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the orbs are a sign that things are good, things are happening, and we're definitely in a shift of vibration.
Yes.
And that, by the way, is that is the implied message, even if it's not direct. The implied message, of course, is we're not alone.
Right.
You know, we're not.
Well, that I think is a really good point, Randy. That, you know, this idea that we're alone, that we're a freak of nature or a glorious accident, as the Darwinians say, is false evidence, because it separates us from our own divinity and our own source. And we're not just some freak of nature. We are part of the overall design, the universe is conscious.
In the 60s, everyone was talking about cosmic consciousness, and people used to think that you had to take drugs to get there, but, you know, you don't. And what people saw, I think, when they were experiencing that in the 60s, what was the truth? And then the trick was to bring it back into their own lives and live that cosmic consciousness that they experienced in a moment.
Right. That's true. And we don't need drugs now. The drugs may have opened the doorways for some, but the door is open.
That's right.
We don't have to keep opening the door.
No.
You know there's something there.
We got to walk through that door. And well, thank you again. I look forward to meeting you both, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'd be excited to see you in New York.
Yeah, so November 10th, everyone come down to the Synagogue of the Arts, 49 White Street, 3 blocks south of Canal, and call me for reservations, 212-473-6388. I'm going to end with this song by Duke Williams and the Extremes called Masters of Light, and it's kind of a out there song about the next dimension. Okay, I'll talk to you guys soon.
Great, Alan. Thanks.
Good night.
Here, this is a song called Masters of Light, and Duke Williams actually had a lot of UFO experiences, and he wrote this song as a rock musician. Okay, here it is.